All right, everybody. Welcome to episode 713 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and Manny is joining me. Manny, welcome to the show.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Freeze number 3, as well as the first issue of a new title from Top Cow, Vindication. So overall, Freeze from Dan Wickline and Philip Seve has been really interesting. You know, we had Dan and Philip on the show before the first issue dropped. I think when it was Final Order Cutoff was coming up, and because we wanted everybody to get a chance to hear about it and go out and order it, go out and pre-order it from your comic shop. So we haven't talked about it since then, but I did really get a sense of what the story was going to be like. And Dan had mentioned just how big of an idea this became as he started to flesh it out. And that's really been self-evident when you read the issues so far and just how fast-paced things have gotten. We really skipped over a lot from first issue to the second just because Dan wanted to get to the story he was going to tell. You know, at the end of the first issue, we only see a few people that are awake. And then when the second issue starts, you know, there's hundreds already. There's already sort of a society that's been reestablished. So just to remind everybody kind of the basic premise of Freeze, one day, all of a sudden, with no explanation whatsoever, every living being on the planet, every human being. I don't know that we've seen that it's every living being, because we've seen dogs, but did dogs have to get unfrozen? Not sure. But anyway, all the humans all of a sudden are frozen in time. They're in some sort of stasis. We haven't gotten any explanations in terms of why this has happened. What we do know is somehow they're still alive, even though their heart is not beating, their blood is not pumping. So you kind of think it has to be something like magical or supernatural in a way, because these they don't have to keep eating. They don't have to – there's nothing – I mean, I guess their bodies are in stasis, so they wouldn't really need to – you know, to be ingesting protein and sustenance and such to keep existing. But it does seem like they would keep aging. So yeah, it's an interesting concept to think about. But one day everybody is frozen except one guy. And for whatever reason, this one guy has the ability to wake up others, which he discovers accidentally when he trips over somebody. He's the only one who apparently has the power to awaken others. And that causes some of the awakened people to sort of put him on a pedestal and start thinking of him as like sort of the hand of God, if you will, because he's the only one that can sort of, you know, return people to life. So that's the basic premise of the story. That's how it starts out. And as I said, at the end of the first issue, there's only a very small group of people who are awake, basically. Second issue starts, and as I said, a society is already starting to reform. They've awakened a lot of people. They're trying to be careful about who they awaken and why, in terms of let's wake people up who are who have skills that we need, right? Like somebody who knows about power plants and, you know, electricity and, you know, doctors and things like that. So that's where we are. At the end of the first issue, one thing they discover at the end of the second issue is there's somebody that's going around and taking these frozen people and cutting them open. They come across this woman in a grocery store who's basically been like had her she's cut open and her inner organs have been removed, like her heart, her lungs, that kind of stuff. And so it's pretty gross when you think about it. But what's an interesting concept is like, so is this murder? Because technically she could still be awakened. She's not dead because she's not awake, right? She's still frozen. She hasn't been thawed out. So she's not really dead. And if you found her organs and put them back in and then woke her up, could she live? Could she survive? Like, I have no idea. But it's an interesting concept. And clearly people are horrified that this is happening. Because they tried to do their homework in terms of who they were waking up to try to be sure to not wake up, you know, crazy people or criminals or whatever. It's a pretty precarious position there, and they've got to be really careful with who they wake up, and then all of a sudden are thrown into this mystery of who's going around killing people. So in the third issue, we continue with the sort of the mystery of and the investigation of who's going around killing these people. And the guy that has the power to wake everybody up, Ray Adams is his name, he addresses a big gathering of the people who have been awakened to say, hey, here's what's happening. And obviously, if anybody knows about this, please come forward and let us know, because this is not good. You know, we're trying to sort of rebuild a society in a lot of ways. And you can't do that if somebody's going around murdering people. So it's a really interesting concept. And I did not expect the story to go this way at all. When we got the first sort of dead body in issue two, I was like, wait, what? What's going on? I did not expect it to go this way. So what are your initial thoughts on the series, Manny?
Well, when I first looked at it, I didn't really know what direction it was going to go in. From issue one to, you know, whoa, what's going on in this besetting this world, to issue two, where they already have a kind of a, like you're talking about, a society, and to the end of it, it was like, whoa, like this just went from, you know, a book about, you know, how to repopulate the area, to who really has the right to, who really can say yes or no to who should be existing. And when you do, whose responsibility is it? And then there's just so many more questions that now come up, that just about, I mean, just ethics. And it really actually made me think of Stan Lee, with great power comes great responsibility. Because if you think about it, this lady who they found cut open, that's his responsibility. Whoever did it, it was somebody he awoke. And how is it that you're able to just justify waking this person up because he's more important than maybe like the grocery store guy or whatever? And, you know, what gives you that? Just because you have the power, does that give you the right to do it? I mean, there's just so many questions that come up. And then what I'm really loving about the book is the longer it goes on, I know that we're only a couple of issues in, more questions pop up, more about society and about almost playing God. I mean, I know that the cover for issue three, I thought was very appropriate, because, you know, is he really the savior? You know, can you really even call him that? So yeah, this especially with the title Freeze, it really caught me off guard. But I know we haven't talked about the artwork yet, but I mean, it's so clean, colors are so crisp. Looking at it, it's a delight to look at. And then it's one of those comic books, that the type of books that I really like, because it's not maybe you've heard me say this a couple of times, like a Capri Sun book where you just flip through the pages and you're done 8 minutes later and you're like, oh, okay. This one really leaves you thinking about, you know, about the problems that they're going through there, and what you're just questioning certain things.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And let's get into issue three in a little more detail, and then we'll talk a little bit more about kind of the big ideas. As I mentioned, it was written by Dan Wickline. We have art by Philip Sebi. Letters are by Troy Pateri. So kind of a smaller creative team than what you might normally see. So it's really a testament to these guys that they're putting out such a high quality book. You know, Philip, when he was on, he was talking about the fact that he wanted to handle the coloring himself. Which I think has been a little bit larger of a task than he first realized. So we've kind of brought you up to speed on what's been happening so far. And the other aspect that we didn't necessarily mention is sort of the religious aspect. And again, there's so many big ideas, and so this concept is so rife with possibility for story. But yeah, there are people who they're not necessarily worshiping Ray, but they are looking at him as sort of the hand of God. And then there's other people who are looking at him as almost what you could call like a false prophet in a way. They're like Manny was saying, this guy's got all this power in a way. What gives him the right? And there are people that don't like that. There are people that think that this was sort of God's way of cleansing the earth again, you know, a la the great big flood. And so in that way, some feel that Ray is standing in the way of that, standing in the way of the earth reclaiming itself by waking people up. And it's just time for the human race to die out. And there's other people that see Ray as sort of this Noah figure. He's the one that's going to choose who gets to continue. But again, what right does he have? So there's that aspect as well. And we also saw, actually, I should mention this. The series starts out, and the way we're getting all this backstory, when the series starts out, everybody's frozen, and there are apparently different factions. Like, I shouldn't say everybody's frozen, but the majority of people are frozen. There was a society that started to rebuild itself because of the people Ray awakened. But when the series starts out, we see that there are some people that are trying to rescue this woman. I think she's in a university class. She's in class at a college. Ray and some people that are with him, some of his companions, go and they wake her up and they rescue her. And they fly off in a helicopter. But they're being chased and shot at by other people. So again, like Manny was saying earlier, how Ray feels a little bit responsible for this guy that's going around cutting people open and taking out their organs, he's also responsible for these enemies that are chasing him because he literally is the only one who can wake people up. And he's not making those decisions solely. There's sort of a council of sort of the first people that woke him up, including one who was his boss at the company he worked at, where he worked IT. Gavin Ordway is his name, and we get some clues in this issue that him and the doctor that Ray first woke up maybe don't have Ray's best interest at heart. We're not 100% sure of why that is. Like, what is it about Ray that they don't like, other than maybe they just are jealous or covetous of the power he has to awaken people. But anyway, the sort of the structure of the story is that Ray and his companions have rescued this woman. And I have to think that she must have something. They believe that she has something to do with how either why the freeze happened or she has a way to reverse it. She must know something. She must have some knowledge that they need. And so the way that we're getting all this history of what happened is Ray is filling her in. Okay, this is what happened the day that the freeze happened. And these were the first few people that I woke up. And then this is when we discovered it was much worse than we thought, because although all the people froze, the cars that they were driving didn't freeze. The planes that they were riding in or piloting didn't stop. So, you know, planes were falling out of the sky. You know, a lot of people died that first day. Anybody in surgery would become frozen. I don't know, like, would their blood stop flowing? Their heart's not beating, but what if they were cut open? What about the machines that were, like, you know, if somebody was on a heart bypass machine, things like that, right? So just a lot of people died that first day, a lot of collateral damage, car accidents, all that kind of stuff, industrial accidents. That's how we're getting the story. That's how we're learning how things have unfolded. And we're getting it mostly from Ray's perspective. But as we're coming into issue 3 here, we start to learn more about the mystery of who's ever cutting these people open. And we start to see some cracks and see probably the beginnings of how these different factions formed. Because early on, clearly it's not what you want, right? You're rebuilding society. Now it's a chance to, again, one of those interesting concepts you can play with in this great bigger concept that Dan Wickline has created. Now you have a chance to start over, and you literally get to choose every person that's part of your society and rebuild it in the right way so that there isn't crime, let's say, or there isn't, war, you know, there isn't famine. Like, there's no reason for people to go hungry. There's there's no scarcity of resources because you've just shrunk your society down so small. But I think part of the story that Dan is trying to tell is the fact that, yeah, you can shrink your society down to a few thousand people. You still have differences in belief systems and values and opinions, and eventually that's going to lead to conflict. In a way, it's kind of a cynical look at humanity, right? Like, man, you can say everybody's basically won the lottery. Everybody's won jackpot. You can have whatever you want. You want to have a cool Porsche? Go and take one from the dealership. You want to have, you know, whatever, food or whatever, you know? You don't even need to work, really, because everything's just out there for the taking. And it's pretty, as I said, pretty cynical way to look at things that they didn't get too far down the line before, well, turns out we woke up somebody who's a serial killer or a pervert or something wrong with them, some sort of deviant, because he's going around cutting people open. So as issue 3 starts off, we see Ray and some of his companions who have rescued this girl, and they're traveling along, and Ray is keeps filling this woman in. I can't remember what her name is, but he's filling her in on the story. She's saying, wait, I'm confused. One of the people you awoke was killing the frozen people. And Ray says, yeah, they were sort of mutilating the bodies so that if I did touch them, they would die. And the woman's like, well, why would anyone do that? Ray says, well, yeah, that was just one of the many questions that we were asking. And so Gavin Ordway, who is the boss of Ray at his old company, who he awakened, who really seemed to relish in the power and kind of try to position himself as sort of the head of things, the de facto president. He's the one that thought, well, let's make sure we wake up people, you know, the right people. And so he got all 127 people together to let them know what was going on. And Ray says, yeah, it sounds like that was a lot of people until you think of it in context. There are 7.5 billion people on the planet, but we were trying to be cautious and just wake up the people we needed until we figured out what was going on, keep the power on, keep cell phones working, grow food. And Ray's like, yeah, I didn't know what half of them did. I was just doing what Gavin told me, which that might be on Ray from, you know, just doing what he was told, as opposed to asking more questions. But Gavin said, hey, I have a plan on how to rebuild society. And in Gavin, he trusted, I guess, even if he didn't particularly like him, because he was kind of a dick when he was a boss. So Gavin was like, I'm doing research on these people. I'm finding out, you know, I'm looking at their social media and stuff, trying to find out who they are and make sure that we're waking up the right kind of people. And Ray tells this woman, yeah, I trusted Gavin. And obviously it appears that trust is going to be betrayed at some point, and that's how we get to different factions. But Ray said, yeah, I trusted him basically because I had to trust somebody. Every time I touched somebody, I felt like they would wake up and become my responsibility. And so if I was the one adding them to the mix and I was the one that had the ability, I needed somebody that I could trust. I needed somebody to kind of share that responsibility with me as opposed to me just choosing. I mean, it's bad enough I'm physically responsible for waking them up. What if I chose badly? Well, clearly they did, because one day they unfroze somebody who started killing people, basically. They don't know who that is. So Ray does say that. In one day, someone I unfroze tried to kill me, and we found another was mutilating bodies. That was on me. And what he's referring to is the fact that they found bodies mutilated. Earlier in that day, it was one of those religious zealots that I was talking about who attacked Ray and tried to kill him, saying he was a false god, basically. Attacked him with a garden hoe, of all things. So we see Gavin's addressing the crowd. They've told them about discovering this body, and they say, if anybody knows anything about who did this, come talk to me or talk to Ray or talk to Dr. Rahman, who's another one of the early people who got awakened that first day. And they're kind of, I guess you'd call them the sort of the inner council or the city council or the leaders, as it were. So then Gavin asks Ray to reassure them that everybody's all right. And Ray's like, I don't know what to say. I'm not a public speaker. And Gavin's like, it doesn't matter. They look to you as a leader. So just lead them. Just if you're calm, they'll be calm. And so Ray's like, yeah, okay, we've gone through so much. We have questions, and now the life we're building's been kind of thrown off course, and I'm surprised by this too. I can't believe somebody I woke up could commit these acts, and I need to know why. So please help us out and let us know if you know anything. So meanwhile, Gavin, that's what they tell people, right? Meanwhile, Gavin's always going to be the kind of person that keeps things from people and works behind the scenes. And that can be good or bad, depending on your point of view. But Gavin says, okay, we need to keep any additional information quiet until we found the person that's responsible for this. I did pick out two people that we already woke up to help. One of them's Edgar, who was an LA police officer before he joined his father's telecommunications company. And the other is Winston. He's an ex-Marine. And I'm going to send them out looking for more victims and make sure they bring them back to us. And they're like, wait, you want to move the bodies? And Gavin says, yeah, one body could be a fluke, but if we start finding a bunch more and people start stumbling across them, that could cause panic. And I don't want our whole society to come tumbling down. And Ray says, you think there's more mutilated bodies out there? And Gavin says, well, I don't know. And that's probably why we should start looking. And so Winston and Edgar go out looking. And unfortunately, they find a lot. They find a lot of bodies. Meanwhile, two of the other people that were awakened early, Lisa and Marie, they're searching around as well. And basically looking around in malls where dust has kind of settled over everything, you know, and people aren't moving around. So when they find footprints in the dust, like where no dust fell, but now because a body's been moved, there is, you know, a trace or indication that there was a body there. And they seem to be interested in solving the mystery themselves, which you just wonder if it's a way for them to sort of take back power in a way, because they feel like things are out of control. They're spiraling out of control. And so another thing that happens in issue 3 is that Ray goes and visits one of those religious groups that really believe that Ray's like a modern day prophet. And, you know, they all want to touch him, and they're saying, praise the Lord, and you're God's servant. And yeah, Ray is this really, really freaks Ray out that they look at him as the chosen one to rebuild humanity, hand of the Lord, blah, blah, blah. And so Ray quickly leaves. And again, I think it's just a way for Dan and Philip to show us different aspects of what this big event would do to people. And Ray leaves pretty quickly, and they, one of the leaders of this group follows him outside and says, you know, I'm sorry about that. They all sort of freaked out and wanted to touch you, but they've calmed down now if you want to come back in. Ray said, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I don't think I need to be heading back inside. So you kind of wonder, is it one of those religious zealots who is who's doing this? We don't know. So anyway, Ray then gets a call, and Gavin has him meet in a remote location in a parking lot where they show them what Edgar and Winston have found. And as I said, it's a lot of mutilated bodies. It's a lot of bodies that have had their chest cut open and their heart removed. And it's pretty gross. And again, they're wondering, okay, who's doing this and why? And it looks like it's done with such precision too. Like they're cutting their chest open and pulling their heart out. It's not, yeah, somebody's got to have some knowledge to do that, you would think. And so as Winston says, all right, hide the bodies basically where people can't find them. Dr. Ramon and Ordway are talking, Gavin are talking, and Gavin's saying, that's a whole lot of bodies. And Ramon says, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go through them and see if they're anything like the one at the market. It won't be much to go on, but maybe we can get an idea of what's going on. And Gavin's just like, again, he just doesn't understand. Like, why would anybody do this? Why are they mutilating these bodies like this? It's crazy. And Ramon says, well, it's many things, but I don't think it's insanity. Who's ever doing this? There's a lot of other ways that they could kill somebody. They could cut off their head, stab them, shoot them, like other things that could be done a lot easier than removing their heart, because again, it looks like they're doing it with sort of surgical precision. And so it seems like somebody's trying to make a point, making sure these people are impossible to awaken, but in a nice way, in a nice way, if you can fathom that. And Ramon says, yeah, that's what it looks like to me. So Gavin says, and then any news on the other concern? And Ramon says, and this is where we start getting to the bad part of things, the conspiracy part of things, if you will. And Ramon says, no, I'm afraid not. I've tried both the blood and skin samples that I got from Ray, but neither were able to awaken a test subject. So they took skin samples, blood samples from Ray, and they touched those samples to another person, but it didn't work. Only Ray's actual touch of his hand or finger will actually awaken somebody. And Ramon says, you know, if I can't figure out how he's able to do it, we're not going to be able to replicate it. And it might help if we ran some tests while he was in the midst of unfreezing somebody. And Gavin says, no, we can't do that because then he'd know what we're trying to do. Gavin says he's getting harder to manage and someone's tried to kill him. And as long as we control him, we control everything. And until you can duplicate his ability, we have to keep him alive. So they're looking to kill the guy. They're looking to kill Ray. They're looking to remove him. I don't think that's necessarily true that they want him dead. But like Gavin said, as long as we control him, we control everything. That's what they're after, control. They want to be the ones making the decisions, the ones who are in power, who get to decide who wakes up and who doesn't. And at the end of the day, they can kind of suggest to Ray who to wake up and who not to. They can try to control him. But until they have that power for themselves, they're always, in a way, going to be at Ray's mercy. And the other, you know, here's another big concept to explore in this idea. What if Ray, like if Ray gets killed, that's it. Nobody else gets to wake up that we know of, because so far he's the only one that we see who's been able to wake people up. So yeah, Gavin, not a good guy, clearly. So they decide to take all the bodies over to the doc's place so he can run autopsies on them. And meanwhile, Ray heads home, and when he gets home, pulls up in front of his house, gets kidnapped at gunpoint. He, again, this is all information he's relaying to the woman that they rescued. And so he says, it turns out that even in the new world we were creating, I was still far too trusting. Because Ray, as he was heading home, saw this guy standing on the side of the road. He stopped asking, are you okay? What happened? Guy pulls out a gun, drive, and... Now, we find out it's actually a woman, because Ray says, she told me that some people in this world would take advantage of you if given half the chance. Right? And that's exactly what was happening to Ray. His fatal flaw from even before this event happened, and he started waking people up, being the only person that had the ability to do that. He was far too trusting, his fatal flaw. So, again, it's very fast-paced, and it's such a big story, and I think that's why between each issue we're getting a big jump. And then we're getting a little bit of context and information to kind of fill in the gaps. But even with that, even with as much ground as this story is covering, where it's each issue isn't necessarily fast paced, but again, we're getting that accelerated timeline. Even with that, this idea is so big that there's so many questions and so many mysteries and so many ideas and concepts to be explored. So I hope everybody's picking this up, because it's a really interesting book in terms of concept. It's also really good characterization. The art by Philip Seve is some of the best work he's ever done. So it's really firing on all cylinders. I haven't heard enough people talking about it. It's another part of the reason we wanted to cover it, because I think everybody should be picking up this book. It's absolutely incredible, from the artwork, the coloring, the concepts, the dialogue, everything. It's really, really good. I think it has the potential to reach an audience similar to Think Tank, which is another book that gives you a lot of concepts and tells an entertaining story. But it's one of those books where there's a lot to think about, you know, in much later, after you finish reading the book, after you finish reading the story or the arc or whatever, there's still so much there to think about. And in that way, you get a lot of value for your comic dollar. So Can't wait to see what happens next in Freeze. It's been really, really good. What do you have to add, Manny?
Well, I mean, kind of like you're saying, it's such a big story with so many ideas, so many directions it can go. At the same time, it seems like they're doing a fairly good job at still keeping it together, because I mean, just in this issue, you have like talks about religious aspects and groups, and then just the group of people that are now scared because of, I mean, you can call it terrorist act or whatever you want to call it, leadership roles, and just, I mean, it comes down to, I'm going to quote Mary Poppins here, where she said, "The cover is not the book." I mean, they went by all these people by their attributes, as far as this guy's a doctor, we need him. This lady's a teacher. This guy's good with tech. This guy. So I think they just looked at their resume and unfroze them. And you and I both know, just by, I mean, looking at just old documentaries and just on TV, that, you know, there's some of these people with these great talents and jobs. They can still be really, really messed up people inside their head. They could be living a double life. And I think this is something that wasn't necessarily taken into consideration, because there was no interview process. And if the guy turned out to be crazy either way, what are you going to do? You can't freeze him back. So, I mean, I think that that's something that at the time, just out of desperation, they just unfroze whoever they thought was good. And when you do that, it's, you know, you probably let out a couple of psychos that nobody even know. I mean, a lot of times, some of these people, their own families don't even know about the type of person they really are. And you tell me this guy who's going to just randomly pick people, he's going to pick all good people. And even if they are, a good majority of them are all good people, I mean, how many of them can stay that way? I mean, just you see a little bit of friction now in leadership, and is he really the right person to lead? And then you see another group of people trying to figure out a way that they can maybe start unfreezing people without him. And so there's just so much to cover. I'm so glad a book like this was written. It just makes it for a very, very entertaining story that can spark some pretty good conversations. And and especially if you give the power to somebody like that. He's telling the story at the end about when he's in school and about his friend who asked him to hold a bag. His principal said he was too trusting. And I think this is the case. And unfortunately, you can kind of see that throughout the issue, that he's taking advice from a lot of people, and he's just kind of like, all right, this and that. And yeah, he's too trusting. And I'm 100% sure it's going to continue to complicate things for him. And you know, this is one of those stories that I just cannot wait to get the next issue to see what's going to happen next. And then maybe hopefully, this is all without even touching the fact that, you know, how did he get this ability? And so, I mean, you almost, that with so many things going on, the main premise of the story kind of takes a back seat, which is, I think was really, really cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's, again, there's so much to think about, so much to explore. So hopefully this title goes on beyond just the first arc, the first initial story that Philip and Dan want to tell. So, all right, let's talk about Vindication number one. Let me give the creative team really quickly. It's written by Matt Hawkins and M.D. Marie. Created by, I should say, Matt Hawkins and M.D. Marie. M.D. Marie is really handling the writing duties solo. Pencils are by Carlos Mico. Inks are by Dema Jr. Colors by Tiago Goncalves, with letters from Troy Pateri. So, all right, Manny, why don't you let us know what Vindication's about and your thoughts on the first issue.
Well, Vindication number one follows the story of a man. I think his first name is Troy Washington. He had been sentenced to life for murder, life in prison for murder without parole. Now he goes back to court because of lack of evidence. There was lack of DNA evidence to support the verdict. It was overturned and he was let go. From the very, very beginning of the book, you get the idea that everyone is pretty much out to get him. It's the phrase innocent until proven guilty definitely is not the case here. You can tell from the security, the prison guards, they're just talking about how he's gonna be back, how he's going to, you know, give a confession again, and they can't wait to see him again. And as soon as he hits the streets again, right outside is the detective who put him in, who is right there ready to say, saying, "I promise you, I'll be there to see it when you slip up." And he's actually gets in his face and things get physical to the point where he pushes him down. Luckily, his public defender is there to help him up. But he does take something from him. And from there on, it's really a story of the detective almost obsessively trying to put him back in jail, to the point where he gets a new partner. He's kind of ignoring what his current duties are, and he's obsessively just trying to find ways to get Washington back in jail, to the point where there's a new murder. And because of the fact that it looks similar to what happened to Washington, he almost goes back to the point of trying to plant evidence. But fortunately, his partner catches him in the act, and without necessarily accusing him, kind of calls him out on it, and is able to get out of that jam. And from there on, back at the office, two new detectives come in to take over the case because they think he's too close. He freaks out, and he goes on to possibly working on it on his own without the consent of his chief. By the end of the issue, somebody has brought him a CD, and he looks it over. It looks like there's some sort of evidence linking him to the new murder, where he says, I got you now, Washington." Somebody obviously also wants him back. Who it is at the moment, we don't know, but. And it looks like he's going to do whatever it takes to get him back in jail, whether he was guilty or not. Now it's interesting to see that in the beginning, you kind of see the thoughts of Washington as he's going out of jail. It gives you the idea that he didn't actually do the murder. He didn't actually commit the murder. So you're going on this ride of this, it doesn't also give you a clear stance whether the detective's actually racist or he's actually just profiling him, or if he's just really sure that he did it. So that also makes for another interesting storyline, because as we read on, it's like, so why exactly is he so sure that he did it? Is it really that he's so sure that he committed the crime? Is profiling him? Is he just racist? What's his motive for being so sure? I mean, so sure enough that he met him right outside of the prison when he first walked out, just to let him know that he was going to catch him again. What kind of record maybe does Washington have before that makes him the type of suspect for that type of crime? So it's a really good issue, setup issue, and I am very curious to see how this is going to develop. I want to know more about the detective's past. I want to know about Washington's past. And then also, who is this mystery man trying to put him away? Is it somebody just with a grudge? Is it the family of the victim? And so just really, really well written, really entertaining, really a lot of depth in the story. And, it's a really good book for the times that we live in, especially because a lot of cities across America have a lot of tension between police and citizen relations, especially when sometimes ethnicities and color come into play. And sometimes it's justified, a lot of times it's not. And so it raises a lot of those questions. It probably kind of just like freezing, it can lead to a lot of good conversations, and just the type of police we have out and how they go about maybe profiling someone or not profiling someone. So it's a really good read, really good start, and cannot wait for issue number 2.
Yeah, it's interesting to start speculating about why this detective is so obsessed, like you said, with, and the guy's name's Turn Washington, which why the hell would you name your kid Turn? Whatever. Neither here nor there. Neither here nor there. But yeah, why is this guy so obsessed? You know, is it because he's racist? Like you said, is it because he's profiling, or is it because he was the one that put this guy away? You know, it was his collar. It was his, it was his work. It was his case. And so maybe it's just the fact that he doesn't think that he was wrong. Because it's not like the conviction got overturned because they found out somebody else did it. It was, on appeal, they found out that the DNA evidence was inconclusive previously. And so now it's like, okay, I still think he did it. I still want to solve the crime. So I'm going to do whatever I have to. But like Manny said, he meets him outside the prison when he leaves and ends up shoving him. And of course, there's a news crew there that may or may not have gotten it on tape. And because it's news, here's this guy who spent 10 years in prison and wasn't guilty of it. And so an internal investigation begins into Detective Chip Christopher. And, you know, why was he there? Why did he shove this guy? And so he's got internal affairs officers investigating him. And one of the internal affairs officers is apparently somebody he had a previous romantic relationship with. So that adds a layer of complexity. The woman that's murdered toward the end of the story was on the jury that initially convicted Washington and sent him to prison for life with no parole. So when she shows up dead, you know, Detective Chip Christopher immediately suspects Washington. And as Manny said, there's, you know, so much, so he believes so much in the fact that Washington's a bad guy and he's done this stuff. He's planting evidence. You know, there's a phone number. There's a piece of Turn Washington's shirt pocket that got ripped in that initial altercation outside the prison that Christopher plants at the location. So there's that. There's his new partner, you know, calling him out on these things. She catches him trying to plant the phone number, doesn't catch him trying to plant the shirt pocket necessarily. So there's that whole aspect of it. So you wonder, yeah, what exactly is going on here with this guy? Why is he so hell-bent on making sure Washington goes back to prison? So the concept of the story is interesting. It feels very much like a police procedural in that way, you know, like Law and Order SVU or whatever, sort of a bigger story. And so I like the concept. I like the fact that it's sort of messy in all the different moving pieces and different dynamics of the relationship between these different police officers and Washington and, you know, Washington trying to put his life back together and all of that. There's only one sort of like plot discrepancy, I'll call it, that kind of has me wondering about things. When we see Washington get out of prison, he gets this check for $200, basically. I'm not exactly sure. I've never been to prison, knock on wood, thank God. So I'm not exactly sure how we're. I know that some inmates in prison, they work jobs and they get paid some ridiculous amount of like 30 cents an hour or something ridiculous like that. But I think there's also, so I don't know if that's where the $200 check comes from, which if you work in a job for, you know, 10 years, really wasn't getting paid much if you only made $200. Or if there's some program where when inmates get out, they get a little bit of money, like a stipend to help them get back on their feet, which $200, I don't know what that's going to do, like drop in the bucket, right? But my point is like where the plot hole comes in, like here was this guy who and maybe it goes back to the fact that his conviction got overturned, but it doesn't mean he was wrongfully convicted, right? So because that's not explained 100%, because usually when people are wrongly convicted and DNA evidence exonerates them, right? They find out somebody else did it, or they find out through the DNA that there's no way that that person that got imprisoned for it could have done it. Then they get like millions of dollars. They get this huge settlement from the county or the state or whoever wrongly convicted them to sort of make up for, you know, their life, you know, this big chunk of their life that they lost. And in fact, I was just reading recently, I think this guy, he's in his early 70s. I think he was in prison for like, I don't know, 39 years or something ridiculous like that, like most of his life. And he got like, I don't know, $4 million or whatever, which I don't think necessarily makes up for losing 40 years of your life, but I guess it's better than not getting it. And so I wonder about that. Like, wouldn't he have gotten, like a bigger chunk of money? But again, I don't know. Maybe it's just his conviction got thrown out. It's not that he was exonerated. And that's why Detective Chip Christopher is still trying to investigate. So good story, interesting concept. And as Manny said, sort of topical and kind of in the now, as we're seeing this happen more and more with DNA evidence. And it's interesting, the reason it's happening for a lot, like they're solving a lot of these cold cases where people are getting exonerated, is because of those like family tree websites where people are sending in their DNA samples to learn about their ancestry and, I'm 25% German and 50% Scandinavian and blah, 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 whatever. Well, what's happening is those companies have agreements with law enforcement. They're turning over all these DNA samples. And, you know, you submit your DNA sample with all your personal information, and they're using those DNA samples to find out about crimes that have been committed where there was DNA evidence. And it's not necessarily the people that are sending the DNA in, but they're like, oh, this DNA has like 9 markers out of 10 in common with the DNA evidence in this crime. And then they look up the person, they say, oh, this person has a brother. And then it's, you know, it's the relatives of the people sending in the DNA who are getting caught for a lot of these crimes. So super interesting. And in that way, it's making this comic very relevant. So I say all that to say this. I didn't necessarily like this comic. It is an interesting comic. It is an interesting story. It is an interesting concept. But the execution for me is where it falls down. The art is okay. I think the color work is actually the strength of the art. It's somewhat of a muted palette, which sort of suits this sort of real world police procedural. But I feel like the art is very stiff. I'm not familiar with this artist at all. And yeah, there are just moments where it seems really, really stiff. The other part that I didn't care for in terms of execution is the dialogue. The dialogue is like super clunky, really like wooden. And in that way, when it pairs up with the art, it just makes for this really, I don't want to say uncomfortable read, but it pulled me out of the story a lot of times, because it didn't sound natural. It sounded like robotic. And I'm not familiar with MD Marie at all. I don't know if she's written comics before. But yeah, I think for me, that's the dialogue, the scripting, and the art were so just clunky is the best word I can use, that it pulled me out of the story and it made me not want to read it. Like it felt a little bit amateurish, and usually Top Cow books are of such high quality. So it kind of bugged me. And I wonder if I'm hoping it's going to improve. I'm going to read the second issue, because I do feel like, as I said, it's an interesting story, and I always feel like you should give a series at least 2 or 3 issues. And I would be willing to read something else by these creators too, because I think if they work on their craft, they're going to improve. But I can't in good conscience recommend this issue on the merits of the execution of the story. I will say, if this is the kind of story that you think would interest you, then definitely pick it up. But don't go picking it up thinking you're going to get some really snappy dialogue or incredible artwork, because it's not that, unfortunately. But the concept, the overall concept, the stories, the dynamic relationships between the characters are interesting. It just needs to be executed better, in my mind. So, you know, I hate not praising Top Cow books and saying, oh, it's so great, you got to go out and pick it up. But, you know, I have to be honest, it execution, just quality wise, it was a little bit of a letdown. What else do you have to add, Manny?
No, I'm gonna have to agree with you on the artwork. But I was so into the story that I didn't, it didn't really pull me out that much. I didn't have too much of a problem with the dialogue. I wonder, this is nothing against the creators of this book at all, but I wondered what, I find myself a couple times thinking, like, what would this book have looked like with a, like Philip Seve artwork, or with Isaac Goodhart artwork, how much more would it have elevated it? Because I didn't like the color. I get it. I get that it's supposed to be more of a dark kind of toned down story, and then maybe that's why I chose that color palette. But it's a little muddy a little bit in the colors. And I didn't like that at all. I mean, even like when I noticed it, I started noticing more when they go to the crime scene. I just did not like the way that those pages were colored. And then going forward, the artwork pulled me out just a little bit of the story. But I was really interested in all of the points they were trying to cover, and so but overall I'm into the story completely, and because I dig these kind of stories just because it's I love my superheroes and mystical books, but a story that's grounded, that has a good shot of being in reality, like something that's probably happening somewhere, I can definitely spend some time on. So I think that the next issue is probably going to give us a couple more answers that we're looking for, and we'll see where it goes. I mean, just at the end of the book, we see the cover for the next issue, and we really get a clear sense of how bad Chip, as they call him, wants to get turned.
Yeah, you know, this is a really, this is a really good example of how much like color and the overall quality of artwork helps to set the tone and the mood for the story. You know, it's one thing to look at just, okay, it's good quality artwork in terms of storytelling, transitions from panel to panel, you know, emotions and face and all that. But then when you look at, as Manny said, colors are a little bit muddy. And then when you just kind of look at the overall art and the anatomy is kind of a little bit clunky, it loses. Right. You're losing out on helping to set the mood and the tone of the story, which then in turn kind of affects the way the scripting and the dialogue comes across, I think. And so it just goes to show what a collaborative effort comics are. And you, like, every part of the book needs to be done really well if you want to have a successful book. So we'll certainly fill you guys in after we read issue 2. Hopefully the art and the scripting get a little bit better, and the story continues to unfold. So I'm wondering if we would have got, as an artist, Jeff Spokes, the guy that did the Aphrodite 5 series recently with Brian Edward Hill.
Right.
That would have been interesting. Or I don't know. I think it was a studio out of Japan that did the Bonehead series with Brian Edward Hill. That would have flipped this completely. It would have felt completely different with that real bright coloring and that type of artwork. Feel more like almost like an action movie. like a Bad Boys type type story. So yeah, again, so interesting that based on kind of the style of line work, the quality of like anatomy, and obviously the color palette you choose. And the color palette you choose makes for such a big impact on the story. So, all right, last thing I want to mention, because this I thought of this when you said Isaac Goodhart. I totally forgot to mention on the cover of Freeze issue 3. Did you see that it's like a bunch of Top Cow creators? Did you notice that? That Philip basically in that story or in that cover put a bunch of Top Cow creators. Like Henry Barajas is on there. Isaac Goodhart's on there. Ryan Caddy's on there. Did you notice that?
No, I'm actually going back to look at it right now. Just that. Oh yeah.
Yeah, Isaac's there in the green shirt. Ryan's wearing a tank top. Henry's got on like a purple beanie. And I imagine some of these other people are people that Philip knows as well. I just don't necessarily recognize them. But yeah, you can't. It's like Henry and Isaac and Ryan are like so obvious. You couldn't help but know it's them. Like I was trying to see, is Matt in here somewhere? So yeah, like I don't know if that's, is that Matt there in the pink shirt to the left?
Maybe. Now we have to ask him who they all are.
Yeah, next time we see him. So anyway, I just thought that was really funny that they're drawing each other on the cover. So anyway, that's going to do it for this Top Cow Thursday. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. Definitely pick up Freeze, as we mentioned earlier, and let us know what you're thinking. And Vindication as well, as Manny and I were talking about. It's a great concept. I'm curious to see where it goes next. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites, and finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.